Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the unofficial WWE podcast. Today is Saturday, June 19th, 2021. My name is Mimi Burris, and there is a giant moth flying around this room. So if you hear any swatting in the background of this podcast, that's me scared for my life from a harmless moth. So yeah, so that's what's going on here. But like I said, we had another Friday Night Dynamite this week. Better than last week for sure. And you know what? I actually, as I listened to a couple other people's podcasts and a couple other, I read some stuff online. I think I might have been in the minority with my review on last week's show, but you know, that I don't change my opinion at all, but I do realize wrestling is subjective. A lot of this is all subjective. I mean, some of this stuff is just bad, but a lot of it is subjective. So, you know, I'm standing firm in what I said last week, but because I was not entertained at all. But yeah, so I thought this week was better than last week. So we definitely have a lot to get into, so let's not waste any time. The show started off with a side-by-side of Jake Hager and Wardlow, and they had their MMA rules steel cage match or whatever it was called. Just an MMA match. I don't know. That's what it says here online, and I'm making sure I'm following and making sure I'm hitting every point of the show. So obviously Hager ended up winning by referee stoppage, which was, Wardlow did not submit while he was in the head and arm triangle in the second round, 2 out of 3 rounds. You guys had a feeling this wasn't going all 3 rounds. We were hopefully going to get a definitive winner because this is AEW and we get definitive winners most of the time, except for the last couple weeks, I guess. I don't know about anybody else, and I don't know who, if any of you guys watch UFC or real professional MMA fighting. If you do, this sucked. If you don't, maybe you were a little bit more entertained. I just, you know, I'm a nitpicker, and the punches were so, like, I understand being gassed. I do totally get that, and I know what that looks like. But being gassed in the first round and throwing those, like, you know, weak elbow chops and fists on the ground and pound, especially Wardlow was especially a culprit of this in this match. So, you know, when you're doing a worked shoot fight like this, it's hard. And I think they did about as good as I've seen, but still not great. And to me, I think you just keep MMA and wrestling far apart. I think I watch UFC to watch UFC fights, and then I watch wrestling to watch fake scripted fighting. Or not fake. I always say that. I don't mean fake. I want to watch a scripted professional wrestling show. And when I watch UFC, I watch it to actually see people punch each other in the face. I think just keeping the two separate is usually for the best, and that is pretty much my summary on this match. Obviously, the after the match, though, guys, I loved a lot more than the actual match itself. Post-match, Sean Spears comes and starts attacking Jake Hager. Chris Jericho tries to make the save, but then obviously you've got MJF coming and beating down Jericho, puts him in an armbar. I can never pronounce what that. I'm just going to say an armbar. He puts him in an armbar and then starts, the Salt of the Earth. That's what it's called. And I can pronounce Salt of the Earth. That's not what I'm talking about. It's like a Fuji. You guys know what I'm talking about. He puts him in the Salt of the Earth armbar. And Dean Malenko actually makes a save for Chris Jericho. And then, guys, MVP of Dynamite this week, Dean Malenko, a 60-something-year-old man, like JR said, with Parkinson's. And, you know, takes a shot on the chin, obviously a work shot on the chin from MJF. Great. Great stuff. If you are a longtime professional wrestling fan, which I know there are a lot of younger people who actually watch AEW, including myself, I guess. I'm a younger person who watches AEW. But I'm also a younger person who goes back and watches a lot of dorky wrestling stuff because I'm a nerd. But so if you are older or nostalgic and or a young dork like me who's gone back and watched like almost every match ever, you know Dean Malenko has a special place in your heart because he was an incredibly talented wrestler who probably never really got his just due. And the man has Parkinson's. And if you know somebody who has Parkinson's, you know what a bitch Parkinson's is. And so, you know, MJF punching him in the face. I know this is all scripted, but right, I hate the guy. Like that perfect heel work, guys. Perfect heel work. Again, this feud is weird and has lost a lot of its gas, but I will say that this built a little bit of heat back up for MJF, maybe not the Pinnacle as a whole. I still think the group's kind of flopped since their inception, but they had definitely built some heat for MJF, so I was a fan of that. I was a fan of the aftermatch more than I like the actual match. I'd love to hear what you guys think. You can always email me at mimi.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. What do you think about these work shoot matches? Do you think they have a place in pro wrestling? I'm not a fan. It just doesn't work for me. But I, again, realize, like I said at the top of the show, that everything is subjective. So I would love to hear some of your guys' thoughts. Frankie Kazarian and Eddie Kingston and Penta cut an awesome promo backstage. Kazarian uses some proverb or something from the Bible, and or Psalm. And it was awesome. I'm not giving it enough credit, but it was really, I thought Kazarian was like the highlight in this promo. Eddie Kingston is the highlight in any promo that he's in. But Kazarian cut a great promo about the Young Bucks being, you know, good Christian boys, essentially, quoting the Bible and saying that, you know, he's not a godly man because he wants revenge or something like that. And then we had Eddie Kingston say that they better pray and hope God takes their souls because they've got their asses. And you get Penta's Zero Miedo thing. And great, this trio, it was something from the very start I was super excited to watch in the main event, and it did not let me down. I just miss Rey Fénix, guys. I just miss Rey Fénix. And obviously I always want to see Pac, but I was totally happy with this trio and the match they put on later that we will get to. Because moving on down the line, we had Taz telling Ricky Starks. Oh, I forgot to mention that, guys, actually, before I go on into this next promo or interview, whatever segment you want to call it. Taz on commentary for that first match. I don't know whose decision that was or why they decided to do that, but genius. Genius stuff. I love Taz on commentary. I want, maybe, hopefully, it was a dry run to see if Taz will, I assume, for some kind of combat background, they wanted him on there, or maybe just add a little bit differentness because it wasn't exactly a wrestling match. I don't know. Wardlow's Hurricanrana would say otherwise, but I did think that that Taz on commentary was the highlight of that whole thing as well. Taz on commentary all the time is the highlight. I hope Taz takes a place on commentary as soon as either, you know, Lawler, oh my god, JR decides he doesn't want to do it anymore or whatever. I want Taz on commentary on Dynamite. Don't put him on Dark. Don't put him on Dark Elevation. Don't put him on Rampage. Put him on commentary on Dynamite because he is one of the best talkers in the business, and he's so, and I'm not, I don't mean like cutting promo wise, he's just so digestible, especially on commentary, and he does such a good job at making everything feel more believable and real and realistic. He's just so good, guys. Taz is so good on commentary, so I did want to quickly mention that. But yes, yeah, so we were talking about after the promo from Kingston, Kazarian, and Penta, we went to Taz backstage with Team Taz. And Taz tells Ricky Starks that the problem with Brian Cage needs to end. And additionally, Taz challenges Taz challenges Hangman Adam Page to a match against Will Hobbs on the Saturday night edition of Dynamite. So one-on-one, I'm excited to see that. And we'll get to, obviously, the Dark Order and Hangman's promo later on. Will Hobbs one-on-one with Page. I'm excited to see this. I know that this is not like a feud that I am enthralled in, but I know the matches are going to be great, and I know that you're using two story beats, Page's story beat of, you know, racking up wins and eventually being able to challenge Kenny Omega for the title, and then you've got the whole, you know, crumbling of Team Taz on this side, and so having great matches in between to further tell both stories is awesome. So early prediction there, I assume Page gets the win with some kind of I don't even want to call it interference, just shenanigans going on with Team Taz. But who knows? Maybe it's just a clean victory. I don't think they're going to put Hobbs over Adam Page clean on Saturday night. But I am excited for the match. So next up, guys, we had Darby Allin versus the Men of the Year. You guys know how I feel about Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. I'm loving this team now, which I never thought I'd say that, because in the beginning it didn't hit right away, but it hits now, and I think the name, the Men of the Year, is great. You know, We all love a little rhyming, guys. We all love a little rhyming. The men of the year are here. So this match was fun. I give it a solid, 3.5 stars. Darby Allin is incredible in the ring. There's no one's doubting that. And he plays a really good baby face that's in the struggle. He does a really good job at just struggling and struggling back. So he's perfect for a handicap match. I'm not a fan of handicap matches as a whole. I just think they're boring. Or maybe I get, PTSD from, 2000s, late 2000s Triple H and handicap matches bearing every tag team ever. But yeah, I'm not a John Cena is a culprit of that. I'm just not a big fan of handicap matches. But who knows? This was not bad. So maybe my thoughts will slowly start to change. So the story of this match is that Darby Allin is obviously in the 2-on-1 situation and is fighting back. And this match also, I think, went the perfect length. Let me throw that out. Maybe a minute. Not even. No, I think it went the perfect length. I don't think I wanted a minute less of it, and I couldn't deal with a minute more of it. So, Ethan Page looked awesome in this match. Obviously, we had Darby zip-tying his feet together, and so he couldn't get back in the ring when Scorpio Sky gets the tag. And, we get a great near fall with a coffin drop to Scorpio Sky, but then Ethan Page comes and grabs Darby Allin. Even just the grab and throw out of, the ring, Darby Allin sold it so well. He was being chucked into the barricade. And obviously, Ethan Page frees himself from the zip ties, and eventually, Darby Allin goes for another coffin drop, but Scorpio Sky, the numbers game catches up to him, and Scorpio Sky hits him off the ropes, or hits his feet, so he lands on the ropes, and Ethan Page hits the Ego's Edge for the 1-2-3, and the Men of the Year win by pinfall. And I was happy with this. I was happy with the finish of this match. I thought Darby Allin got just enough offense in where he didn't look weakling, but also this is clearly a 2-on-1 handicap match, so I appreciate them not supermanning Darby Allin. He was clearly didn't have a chance against two guys, but you could do the little zip tie thing, and I know Darby Allin is a babyface who can get away with that kind of stuff. So all in all, I thought the psychology of this match was done really well. I'm excited to see what the Men of the Year do next. I think we have future tag team champions on our hands, hopefully. But really, what I'd like to see, and I don't know how we're going to get there, I'm happy Ethan Page got the pinfall, because I want to see the 1-on-1 match between Darby Allin and Ethan Page, and I feel like they're dangling it in front of me like a carrot, and I'm a rabbit, and I just want the carrot. Tony Khan, give me the carrot, because, I've heard all this amazing stuff about their matches in Evolve, and all around the world, actually. I don't think it's just been in Evolve, so maybe I'll just have to go watch one of those matches. But yeah, I'm super excited. I think this, tag team has breathed new life into Scorpio Sky. I think Ethan Page fits perfectly in it. And yeah, just because, they got the win over Darby Allin, I don't think this feud is over. I think we're seeing more of this. But I was happy not to see Sting on this, guys. I'm happy Sting kept his promise. And, there was no beatdown after the bell or anything like that. It was just, I don't think this is over, is my point. But I don't know where they're going to go next. And I hope it's Ethan Page versus Darby Allin, but I just don't see, that doesn't make so much sense right now. Besides the fact that Ethan Page got the pinfall. Technically, I guess you could say they're 1-1. But the only thing I'll say about this whole thing, guys, is to me, I understand the whole courageousness of going in a handicap match, 1-on-2, whatever. But to me, Darby Allin just looks stupid. And I'm kind of rooting for the Men of the Year in this thing, because I'm like, okay, that babyface is stupid because he just wanted to take 2-on-1. I get the story, and I'm not naive, and I'm not thick-headed. I understand why Darby Allin does that in his character, because he's prideful and whatever. I just think, though, you're teetering on the line of stupid babyface, and I don't know. Not for me. So when we come back, we get a promo from the Wingmen. And they talk about Orange Cassidy not texting them back. Peter Avalon was so great in this whole show, too. He's talking about, once again, I'm left on red. Great little, cute little promo. They've come out of nowhere, and I don't mind the Wingman, group of jobbers, the job squad. So, was happy with this, and obviously next up we got the match between Cesar Bononi and Orange Cassidy. This was a pee break for me, but I understand why they did it. Orange Cassidy wins by pinfall with the Orange Punch. I'm happy Cesar Bononi is getting more TV time. I'm happy to hear that his wife seems to be recovering from her cancer. And so, Dynamite doing a good thing. I'm never gonna, fault them for that. I appreciate that. And it was fun to see all the little interferences here and there from best friends. And guys, that slingshot thing where they throw through not slingshot, it was like a cheerleader, I don't know what it's called, like a cheerleader move where they threw Orange Cassidy out, best friends threw Orange Cassidy out onto the wingman on the outside. The height that Orange Cassidy got was awesome. So I say it was a pee break, but if I knew that that was going to happen, I definitely wouldn't have gone and taken a pee break. So really awesome match in terms of what they had to do with this, but like they kept it really entertaining for what it was. I don't know if I'm making sense. They kept it really entertaining for what it was, but at the same time, clearly Orange Cassidy lost the big fight, title fight, you know, technically was pinned by Kenny Omega in the roll-up, so, you know, you go on Dynamite, it's kind of similar to Lance Archer, come back and get a win just to get your momentum back. I don't know. Whatever. It was nice to see Orange Cassidy on TV, and he is definitely a draw, a proven draw. So I'm fine with this. This was nothing to write home about, and I don't know why I'm still talking about. So let's move on, guys. Post-match, we had, this is what I was talking about before, Peter Avalon cradling Bononi and just crying out. It was over the top and wonderful, and again, like I said, I love this new job squad. So backstage we had Jungle Boy being interviewed by Alex Marvez, and then Kenny Omega comes up to him with Don Callis and eventually Nakazawa. But Kenny Omega was so brilliant here, talking about how he has, you know, no fancy suit, no title belt, no sunglasses. Why? Because Jungle Boy embarrassed him. And he's going to give him a chance to show him how tough he is. He says he packed a picnic with two knuckle sandwiches for Jungle Boy. He's like, I got one knuckle sandwich here and one knuckle sandwich over here. And he wants to fight right here, right now. And then Jungle Boy's like, why would I do that? I'm just going to fight you next week in the ring for the title. And then Omega's like, okay, well, let me put my hands behind my back. You get the first shot. First one's free. And so Jungle Boy takes about an hour taking off all of his backpack and jacket and phone and all that stuff just to throw a punch. I don't know, it was weird. So you kind of knew something was happening. And then Michael Nakazawa attacks him from behind with a laptop. Omega tries to junk Jungle Boy, but Jungle Boy gets the better of him. And then Kenny Omega, Don Callis, and Nakazawa flee in a golf cart. And Kenny Omega is a brilliant little, you know, bitch heel. I can't think of another word for it, so I'm gonna go with that. And yeah, this was funny and cute, and, you know, we all know what's going to happen next week on Dynamite, but I am still excited to see it. So, and it's going to be a great match, guys. I'm really excited for it, and this was just a small, cute little thing, and Kenny Omega is brilliant. Just, this is, I love this stuff. He's such a jerk heel, but he's also funny, so he's not, like, turn off heat, like, change channel heat. He's, like, just the perfect amount of, like, I hate this guy, I want him to lose the title. I want him to lose all his titles. But at the same time, he puts on amazing matches, and he's hilarious as all hell. So, next up, we had Matt Hardy and the crew talking about how him and Christian made some deal-binding verbal contract or something about the casino battle royale. And then Christian Cage comes in and attacks him, or tries to attack him, but the crew and Matt Hardy, I can't remember their name, so I'm just calling them the crew. Oh, Hardy Family Office, that's what it is. Hardy Family Office and Matt Hardy lock him in a cage thing behind them, and then Matt Hardy just wants to talk. Christian swears and says that if he doesn't let him out, he's gonna beat the stuff out of him. And then Matt Hardy says that he's gonna give Christian an out to retire again, and that he'll pay him out for it. And then Christian says to open the door, and then Matt Hardy says that a little alone time will give him some perspective, and that if he keeps coming after him, he's going to end his career permanently. And I'm just going to move on from this by saying that I don't care about Matt Hardy versus Christian Cage in 2021. Sorry, guys, don't care. I don't know if you do. If you enjoy the nostalgia act, power to you. I don't care about it. I've seen it plenty of times on ECW in 2000, whatever, and I love the tag team matches from back in the day, but I don't care about the nostalgia act. Anyways, let's talk about new up-and-comers and young wrestlers. So next we had Brock Anderson and Cody Rhodes versus Aaron Solo and QT Marshall, and this was a fun tag team match. AEW really needs to figure out this five count thing when you have the other guy in the ring. just the tag team matches are getting a little bit out of hand, and all of a sudden the heels are always never counted for five, but the baby faces always are. There's an extent that you can do that, but this was way too much, and it's always way too much. But, yeah, Brock Anderson and Cody Rhodes win by pinfall. Brock Anderson gets the jackknife cover on Aaron Solo and gets the 1-2-3. And before we go into the post-match, guys, I don't know. I don't know how you guys felt, but to me, I don't know why Brock Anderson wasn't anything special. I think there was something about Anthony Ogogo that had some star power, and I understand why they were putting him in the position that he was in. I understand that Brock Anderson is Arn Anderson's son, but this seems just like a lot of nepotism to me, and he just wasn't that special. He didn't look special. He looks exactly like Arn Anderson, though. It's creepy. Like, exactly like Arn Anderson. But yeah, he didn't look special. He literally wore generic blue tights. He, appearance-wise, like I said, he looked exactly like Arn Anderson, so he looked generic. Didn't do anything super special in the match, just the standard fun tag team match. I love the hot tag to Cody. That was a good part of the match, and obviously Aaron Solo, when he's not interfering in everybody else's match, is pretty good. But yeah, just out, like, Aaron Solo apparently is allowed to do whatever he wants in every match, and the referee doesn't care. I don't know. I don't understand why there was nothing special about Brock Anderson. That's all I'm going to say. And I think, I'm trying to find my words here, because I understand why, clearly, he's Arn Anderson's son. I'm not stupid. That's why you put him on Dynamite for his match, his first match. But I don't know. Like I said, guys, I wasn't impressed. Hopefully he shows me some more. I was impressed with Anthony Ogogo and some other debuts we've seen, obviously. I just wasn't impressed with Brock Anderson, so I could have done with this on Dark. But I guess because Cody's in it, it gets to be on Dynamite. I don't know. All right, moving on, post-match, we had Arn and Brock celebrating, and then we went to the back with another weird-ass promo from Lance Archer and Jake Roberts. They're in some weird warehouse, the same warehouse every time. I guess they just live there. And Jake says that Lance isn't a doctor because he doesn't have any patients. I kind of like that line, I'm not going to lie. And that, what is he going to do? Bitch slap him and tell him to stop? And then Archer is just pacing back and forth and screams, and then Jake Roberts gets scared, and then we go to the next segment, which was a sit down with Andrade. And before we do that, what was this? Lance Archer's promos get more confusing. I literally don't understand any of this. I don't get it. I didn't understand any of this. So someone please email me, explain this to me. What am I missing? What was the point of all this? I have no faith in any believability in Lance Archer. He loses every time. Lance Archer is essentially the embodiment of a casino battle royale. And he's just angry now. What is he going to do next week? He's just going to come down and squash someone else, and I'm supposed to believe that he has a chance the next time he goes up against a champion. The only kind of redemption here is that they do some kind of losing arc, and maybe the story is that, you know, down the line that Lance Archer has lost and lost and lost and lost, and that eventually, you know, it's gotten to him, but this time is going to be different, and then maybe he actually does win a title. But guys, Lance Archer is not a spring chicken. I don't know how much longer they can go with this. And I want to see him, you know, he's great in the ring and he's a big beast, but they kind of booked him to look like a little bitch at this point. You know, Miro had his number and Cody had his number, and I could go down the list. So moving on to the Jim Ross interview with Andrade. Andrade, they obviously had subtitles for him and spoke kind of Spanglish, in and out of Spanish. He says he came to AEW, or excuse me, JR asked him why he came to AEW, and he says because that they have many stars on AEW, but he is a superstar. And JR asks him about the TNT title and the AEW title. And he says he's looking for both opportunities for both of those here. That's his next step. And then obviously JR asks him about Vicky Guerrero, the question we're all wondering about. And he says she understands the business and she's very smart and they have a great connection. Mentions Eddie Guerrero and the Guerrero family name. And then he says, but we all need to wait because him and Vicky Guerrero have a surprise. And yeah, I mean, there was not much to say about this guy other than I still don't really get the Vicky Guerrero pairing, but whatever. I don't think Andrade needs any credibility, and I think Vicky Guerrero is not Zelina Vega. I hope that's the surprise. I hope the surprise is Zelina Vega. Because I don't know. Again, I don't understand the pairing with Vicky Guerrero and Andrade. It just doesn't fit for me. But there's more things about Vicky Guerrero later on in the show that I don't understand either. So we'll get to that for sure. But I think Andrade looked like a star. He sounded like a star. These sit-down interviews with JR are amazing every time. My favorite still being the one with Britt Baker before the last pay-per-view. But this was not too shabby as well. Yeah, I'm excited to see what Andrade does. I'm ready for him to start racking up wins, or, you know, I assume he'll be wrestling on Dark and Dark Elevation. I assume they'll give him his debut match on Dynamite, considering they gave Christian Cage his debut match on Dynamite as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing Andrade in the ring. It's been too long for me. I don't know if you guys have been following him, but it has been too long for me. And I'm excited to see Andrade doing something that he loves with the passion again. So, then next up we had the Dark Order and Hangman Adam Page being interviewed by Alex Marvez backstage. First, he asked if Alex Marvez asked Page about the challenge by Team Taz, and Page accepts. And he says that he's not concerned about that right now. He just wants to have a cool beer and hang out with his friends. And then he talks about, he's asked about being the number two contender to the world title and that match with Jungle Boy and Kenny Omega. And then Paige totally evades the question from Marvez, doesn't want to talk about Kenny Omega, doesn't want to talk about the Elite, doesn't want to talk about the world title. He just talks about John Silver almost being healed up, and that 10 got the win last week, and 5 got a new jacket, and Evil Uno gave the performance of his life against Miro. And he wants to toast to him. And then we cut back to the commentary team because Hangman Page does not want to talk about the Elite and doesn't want to talk about the title opportunity and doesn't want to talk about Kenny Omega. And I think this storyline, this long-term slow burn story, has been brilliant. You know, we all thought it was happening at Double or Nothing. They swerved us with the Brian Cage win. I thought that was really well done. I ranted and raved about that, but just like mutually beneficial to both guys. And I didn't get it right away, but I trusted AEW, and what do you know, I was right to trust them because that was really just such a smart booking decision. And there's the giant moth, guys, it's here. Oh god, I hate bugs. All right. So I was super high on this interview. I'm super high with the storyline. I love how Paige just does not want to talk about the Elite or any of that stuff. He wants to continue to enjoy his newfound friends in the Dark Order, and he just doesn't want to think about Kenny Omega. But eventually, obviously, guys, it's coming. I'm hoping we get to see Paige Omega at our next pay-per-view. And yeah, I forget if it's All In or All Out. I think it's All In. No, All Out. It's All Out. It's late here, guys. All right. So next up, we had the women's match of the night, which was Julia Hart versus Penelope Ford. And this was a great match. Penelope Ford is, you know, awesome and doesn't nearly get enough credit for how good she is in the ring. I was happy to see her just be able to, like, do her own thing and not have Kip Sabian around and just be able to be, like, the badass that she was without him. Julia Hart, again, not too shabby herself, played a great role in this match as well. And yeah, it was nice to just see these two women, like, little matches like this on Dynamite build a women's division for me. I'm telling you guys, I want two. Put two on a show, and it'll really convince me that they actually care about this women's division. It's such a simple thing to be able to do, but if you give the women even a fraction of the amount of time you give the men, maybe I'll start to believe you actually care about the women's division. And look over at NXT, and that is all I will say. But yeah, Penelope Ford wins by submission with the Muda Lock, and obviously she keeps the hold on as long as she can until the Varsity Blondes and the referees come in and break it up. Then Miro comes down. He asks Penelope where Kip Sabian is and promises Penelope Ford that he'll fight for her honor before dropping Griff Garrison. And then Brian Pillman comes in and tries to save his partner, obviously. They all brawl, and then we cut to Dr. Britt Baker backstage being interviewed by Tony Schiavone. So, yeah, exciting stuff. I'd love to see Brian Pillman Jr. get a title shot, but obviously I don't think he's anywhere up there in the rankings, so that doesn't make a lot of sense, but I would still love to see it. I think, you know, there's definitely a wave of momentum following that great Dark Side of the Ring piece done, a TV show, episode, whatever you want to call it, done by, about Brian Pillman Jr., excuse me, about Brian Pillman, with Brian Pillman Jr. in it. And so if you guys haven't seen that, I totally recommend you go watch it, Dark Side of the Ring. They do such a good job. So well done. And this was one of my favorite ones, obviously. There's also a bunch of awesome other episodes as well that you should check out. So, all right, free plug there for Dark Side of the Ring. But moving down, we had, like I said, the interview with Tony Schiavone, Britt Baker, and Rebel. And then Vicky Guerrero comes up to her and complains about something smelling like burgers and says she's not happy because she says that the women's title belongs around Nyla Rose's waist, even though Nyla Rose is not a challenger for Britt Baker's title and a heel, and so is Britt Baker. Anyways, Britt says that she should just hand the title over, and Vicky says that she wants a match, and Tony Khan owes her a favor for bringing Andrade in. Which I can believe that. That's fine. But this is the favor that you get. Like, you have a chance to cash in a favor with Tony Khan, the booker of AEW. And you want a tag team match with Nyla Rose and yourself versus Britt and Rebel. Now, I know Rebel is not necessarily Charlotte Flair in the ring, guys. But she's still probably better than Vicky Guerrero. So, I don't know about you guys. I don't ever need to see Vicky Guerrero wrestle. Ever. Ever. I don't understand why Nyla Rose, the heel, is going up against a babyface, excuse me, a heel in Britt Baker, who they're trying to keep a heel and not be a babyface, as far as I know. This booking is so stupid to me, and I hope I'm missing something. Someone tell me I'm missing something, please, because this makes no sense to me. And honestly, I've seen these two face off before. I want to see Julia Hart versus Britt Baker again. I want to see Ty Conti versus Britt Baker. Give me Riho versus Britt Baker. Give me some of these good babyface women, up-and-comers, right? Not necessarily up-and-comers with Riho, but I want to see Serena Deeb versus Britt Baker. Gosh, I know she played a great heel at Double or Nothing, but still. Yeah, I was just super confused by this. I was confused about it last week, and I hate this. So that's it. All right, obviously this sends us to a great video package with promos from FTR and Proud and Powerful. Essentially, they're both talking about where they were born, their upbringings, and FTR is saying that Proud and Powerful are basically the same as them, but Proud and Powerful are saying that they may think they're the same, but they're not the same, and I want this tag team match as soon as possible. So, Tony Khan, with your stupid carrot, just give it to me. And then we come back and we have Mark Sterling and Jade Cargill cutting another monetization plan promo thing. I don't mind these. I understand why they have to keep Jade Cargill out of the ring, because she'll jump up the rankings, because she has to win, because she's a beast. And we don't want that match versus Britt Baker, because obviously we have a great match planned with Nyla Rose, the other giant heel. Don't even get me started. All right. And then we had our main event. Eddie Kingston, Frankie Kazarian, and Penta versus the Elite, Doc Gallows, Carl Anderson, and Matt Jackson, supposedly gave Nick the night off. And this was as awesome as you would expect it to be. Can we talk about how awesome Frankie Kazarian looks, guys? Like, how awesome Frankie Kazarian looks. It's such a small thing, but like growing out the beard, it adds to the character. And the finish of this match was, like I said, obviously Nick Jackson was not having the night off. He hits Penta with the cold spray, and then Carl Anderson hits the gun stun and gets the 3 count on Penta, and the Elite celebrate, and then the show goes off the air. But guys, this match was what I needed, a great 6-man tag, AEW's bread and butter. I love this. I was into it. Penta, some amazing moves. I could watch anyone from Death Triangle do 15 suicide dives in a match, and I'd be entertained by every single one of them. Some great double team actions, Some great double team action, especially by the Elite. I'm kind of sick of Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows, but I will say that they are definitely playing up with the stupid earrings and the fedora and whatever. It's definitely making me a little bit more invested in the goofballs that they are. So, like I said, I really love watching this. Some great near falls. Eddie Kingston is awesome. You know, love that spot where he gets like punched and doesn't sell it. He had some awesome, just Eddie Kingston. He just had some awesome Eddie Kingstoning. Can we just call it that on this podcast? He just was Eddie Kingston and it was really awesome. Love the diving cross bodies. The lariats all looked awesome. Like everything was snug. And I love, love that springboard leg drop by Frankie Kazarian and such a close near fall. Obviously, I know this was pre-taped, but still, even that nice crowd reaction off the near fall definitely helped it. And so, you know, with the result of this match, I think it could have gone either way and it wouldn't necessarily mattered. I think, though, you do get in the territory of